So come down to the lab and see what's on the slab. I see you shiver with anticipation. Hey folks, this is Rish Outfield. And unfortunately, this is the Rish Outcast.
Well, I guess I must confess that I am starting to get old. All the latest music.
I am going for a walk. I came out here to the lake where I recorded the episode. It was about my tantrum and emotional outbursts. The Big Release, something like that. Although I just realized that could be interpreted as, Rish must have put out his book with this episode. And then I also did the Stormy Weather episode out here. So I drove out to the lake. Today is a balmy 50 degree. Okay, it's 47 now. 47 degrees. And I thought, that's what I will do. I drove out here and I got to the gate to the lake and it said, and you hear that? That is rain. Oh no, how could that be snow? It's 47 degrees. Okay, well now it's raining on me. So anyhow, I got to the gate to the lake and there was a sign that said closed for construction. So I parked the car, I figured I'd just walk around the hiking trails here. A, you can hear the construction vehicles, they're beeping and roaring, and now it is raining on me. So I should have waited to record Stormy Weather today. I'm just going to stand here for a minute. Let's see if I can find a tree to stand under. I think I'm going to force myself to record regardless of the weather. So it's 2018. Now, which means you've probably been spending the first half of 2018 listening to 2017 episodes, and that's fine. And one thing that I've noticed in these last few episodes, posting them, is that there are fewer me rambling on a topic episodes than there are story episodes now. That's interesting. It used to be the other way around. When I first started it, I think it was always going to be story episodes, and then I had one called conversation episode. Hey, folks, this is never going to happen again. And then eventually, that became the norm rather than the exception. To the point where, over on my blog, the one that I don't want people to go to, I designate when a Rish Outcast is a story episode, just because I assumed there are people that only want to listen to those. that's assuming there are people that want to listen to any of them. It is raining. You can hear that, right? So I remember when I was here last having to do battle with the airport, which is just right there, a mile or so away. And there would be these planes and they'd fly overhead and interrupt my frame of mind, interrupt the sound, which probably is already bad. So we've got the construction equipment, we have the rain, we have my footsteps, I would assume, and the airport, all conspiring. I was talking about the episodes, there being more story episodes this year than the other kind, and that's fine. The other kind are easier, but all right, here we go. And so this is not going to change that. This is a story episode for a tale called Grandpa's Prize. And this is one of the older stories we're sharing on the show. Not as old as A Day of Fishing, but I'm trying to think if there's anything else that's older than it that I've run on here. None are coming to mind. This is from the 90s. Well, anyhow, I'll run it and then I'll tell the origin, if you will, of the story. And we can talk a tiny bit about the story if you want. I don't think I have a lot to say, so this might be a short one. Enjoy, if you're at all capable.
Grandpa's Prize. Written and narrated by Rish Outfield. Billy took a deep breath before he pushed open the hospital room door. He made it a point to squash down as much fear as he could before he stepped inside. Grandpa was sitting in the bed, reading a newspaper. He held it very close to his face, squinting at it in frustration, even though he was wearing his glasses.
Grandpa?
The old man lowered the paper, and Billy took a quick breath. He looked white and small and unhealthy. Even his hair looked sick.
All right, close your mouth already, Grandpa grumbled. I already knew I'm no Mr. Universe.
Mr. Who?
Billy asked. The old man smiled, and though he still looked sick, a lot of what made Grandpa Grandpa was back with that smile.
So, you heard the news, huh? Well, you should see the other guy.
Billy didn't get it.
Are you okay?
Ah, sure. Just a little tired.
Billy took a seat beside the bed. There was a smell in the room. Not a dirty smell, but a too clean, artificial smell that was almost as bad.
Does it hurt to have a heart attack?
Grandpa waited for a moment, as if debating what to say to that.
Yeah, it's more a pressure than a pain, really. I guess I actually looked down to see if something was pushing on my chest, and my hands felt funny, like when they fall asleep.
Billy nodded. He'd never had a hand fall asleep before. Feet, sure, but hands?
Were you afraid?
Grandpa lifted his palms a few inches off his chest, a gesture like a pitiful shrug.
A little bit. Mostly I was just surprised. Once I knew what it was, there wasn't any fear. I figured I'll either make it to the phone, then sit down, or I won't.
Billy had heard stories of people who saw lights and dead people and angels and stuff in those situations, but didn't dare ask if he had seen Grandma. He thought of an easier question.
Did you get to ride in an ambulance?
I did,
he answered, but did not look impressed.
Did they use the siren?
Uh-huh. But I've been in ambulances before. I'm not in the fan club.
Billy tried to think of something else to say, but the things he had rehearsed on the ride to the hospital had disappeared, and his mind was mysteriously blank.
Son?
The old man asked, a verbal nudge of sorts.
I'm glad you're okay,
Billy said at last. Grandpa smiled, the lines around his eyes becoming overpronounced.
You wouldn't be if you had to pay my bill.
He laughed softly. Too softly. Billy's own smile faded quickly. Even Grandpa's laugh sounded different. It scared him. It made him want to run to the old man's side and hug him in case he didn't get another chance. Grandpa seemed to sense the need to change the subject.
So, where's your dad? He asked. Did he just drop you off and go to work?
No, I rode my bike.
From your house?
Grandpa sounded impressed.
Uh-huh.
Well, you need to get yourself a drink, then.
He pointed in the direction of the closet by the bathroom.
My pants are in there. Get yourself a dollar for a pop.
Billy did. He asked Grandpa if he wanted one.
No, no. That stuff's harder going down than it used to be.
A few minutes later, a large brown nurse came in the room and told Billy it was time for him to leave.
Mr. Brookhart needs his rest,
she said.
Mr. Brookhart is resting,
Grandpa told her with a scowl.
He's been dead since 1971. My name is William, or Grandpa, not Mr. Brookhart.
Very well,
she said, but sounded like it wasn't. She shooed Billy out of the room like a stray dog. Billy wandered up and down the hall, then made his way to a restroom to pee. He kept hearing his mother's words from the night before.
"Now you know that your grandfather is old, right, hon? That he's reached the end of his life?"
He didn't want to believe her, but was mature enough to know she was right. When he came back down the hall to Grandpa's room, the nurse stepped up to Billy, looking at him very differently, almost as if he were another person.
"Can I go back in for a minute?"
he asked.
"Certainly," she said,
coming close to sounding nice.
"Mr. Brookhart explained the situation to me."
She paused, as if tempted to say something more, then just smiled briefly and went on her way. Billy could have sworn she was about to apologize to him. Weird. Grandpa's door was closed. Billy paused, his hand on the knob. Inside, he could hear Grandpa coughing. It was a wet, thick sound that hurt to hear. The boy understood what putting on a brave face meant, even if he didn't know the term, and that's what the old man was doing. His grandfather had taught him so many things, been there for so many events in Billy's 9 years, but soon he would only be memories. Grandpa was going to die. When the boy finally opened the door, Grandpa looked much worse. His skin was ashy, almost gray. He was staring at nothing in particular. For a moment, Billy was afraid that it had already happened, that he was too late.
"Grandpa?"
he whispered.
"Tom?"
Grandpa asked, reaching out with a frail hand.
"No, it's me. It's Billy."
The old man smiled, or tried to.
"Bill, of course. How is your soda?"
"Fine,"
Billy answered.
"The nurse, what did you say to her?"
"Oh, her... I'll tell you later," Grandpa said, with a twinkle in his eye that implied he would not.
Billy studied his grandfather closely. There was something cloudy in his left eye, and it occurred to the boy that maybe the reason he had been struggling with the newspaper was because he couldn't even see out of it anymore. The boy swallowed.
"Are you dying, Grandpa?"
He knew the answer, but wanted to see what he'd be told. Grandpa smiled again, but this one was sadder.
"Yes, yes, I am."
"But you're not scared?"
"No," Grandpa said. "I lived a good life, with a good home, a good wife, a good family and friends, sharing good talks."
He put a hand up to his mouth, as if relaying a great secret.
"And a magical prize from a Cracker Jack box."
"What?"
the boy asked, afraid to laugh, though the rhyme struck him as funny.
"Bill," the old man began, "many people wondered why I was so successful and why I managed to be so happy. Well, I was born to a poor family during the war. Right after the Depression, you know, and life was pretty tough during my childhood. My parents worked hard and sacrificed for me, same as your mom and dad do for you, but I could tell they were scared about the future. But one day, in a box of Cracker Jacks, I found something that changed everything."
Billy watched the old man with wide eyes.
"You've eaten Cracker Jacks, haven't you?"
"Sure."
Though it had been a long time.
"Cracker Jacks were the thing to a kid like me. Because of the prizes. You'd get keen flip cards, tops, stickers, compasses. But they were an extravagance, you understand? But one afternoon, I was a little boy then, surely younger than you, my daddy brought me a box home from the store. It had been smashed by a display, so he got it cheap. Tasted just as good. This particular box had a little plastic mirror as its prize. You know, with shiny silver paper instead of glass in it. Well, the one I got turned out to be special. Magical. If you wished for a thing small enough to reflect in the mirror, a coin, a ball, a bazooka Joe, and so on, it would appear in front of it. I'd think hard about what I wanted, then I'd look into the mirror, and it would be right there. As simple as that.
Billy wanted to believe this story, but wasn't too sure about it. His grandpa had never lied to him before, but he understood that sometimes, when people got sick, they said things they didn't know were wrong.
Okay.
I used it to help me be successful in life, the old man continued. I even wished for an engagement ring with it when I met Grandma.
The man began to cough then, but went on as soon as he was able.
We were happy, and it didn't all have to do with that mirror. No, you have to make your own happiness a lot of the time. But there were situations where the mirror came in handy, times when it changed a bad day to a good one.
Grandpa tried to sit up so he could look at him, but it hurt too much to move. He simply grasped the boy's small hand.
Anything can be both good and bad. Sometimes I was tempted, you understand, to use it selfishly or to increase the position of my business. But your grandma was there to help me know what was right. She was as magical as any crackerjack mirror.
Billy didn't know what to say. The truth was, he didn't remember Grandma very well. It was his grandfather he had always been close to. But if the man said something, it was so.
Bill, Grandpa said, that mirror is worth a lot, more than any diamond. Go to my house, if you like, and find it. If you do, then you may have it. If you like, he said again.
Billy nodded.
I hope it brings you the kind of joy it brought me.
All right,
the boy said, and turned to go.
Wait. Try to keep it a secret, son. If it fell into the wrong hands, there could be trouble.
I won't.
I love you, Bill.
Billy blinked, suddenly feeling like he had to get out of the hospital room. He slipped out the door, already crying. The boy got his bicycle from the front of the building and began to ride away from the hospital. He had to go home for lunch and thought he'd ask his mother if she would take him to Grandpa's sometime later. Billy's mom was very busy that day, however, and had errands to run that afternoon. Billy had to make a choice, and the one he made was to leave a note saying he'd gone for a bike ride. A long bike ride. The sun was already going down when he rode up to Grandpa's house, his legs aching so much he could barely pedal. The first thing Billy noticed was that the gate was open, which was odd, but he parked his bike beside it and walked up to the door. He used the key hidden under the mailbox to open the door, and his eyes went wide when he saw the condition of Grandpa's home. The couch was torn up, the television crushed, the desk and bookshelf overturned, the closet ransacked, drawers scattered around the floor, boxes emptied, the mattress pulled down, the coin bank shattered, pennies, nickels, and dimes spread over half the bedroom. Someone had been there, searching for something. It couldn't just be a coincidence. Billy knew what they were searching for. He locked the door behind him and looked around, feeling sick somehow deep in his stomach as he observed the usually neat rooms in such a condition. Billy heard a crunch under his feet and saw several of Grandpa's chess pieces scattered across the floor. The chessboard he was always promising to teach Billy on was a yard away, a large footprint scuffed in its center. He went from room to room, remembering the good times he had spent there, and wincing when he saw so many things disturbed and destroyed. As Billy finished his unpleasant tour of the house, he became convinced the intruders had found what they were looking for. Finally, with night falling, convinced the intruders had found what they were looking for. With that thought, he sat himself down in his grandfather's easy chair, taking in that old familiar smell that reminded him of cowboy programs and Dr. Seuss books, and did nothing in particular for a good long time. Finally, with night falling, Billy found two of Grandpa's pictures, still in their frames, although the glass was cracked. One was the big family picture taken for their anniversary, when Billy was 3 and before Grandma got sick. The other was of Grandpa as a boy. It was in black and white, and in it, the young Grandpa stood between his parents, waving in front of something called Old Faith, cut off by the edge of the picture. Sure enough, in the boy Grandpa's hand was a shiny circle, gleaming like metal. Billy took another look at the family picture. Beside the cracked glass going from top to bottom, he saw it again. Amazingly, hanging around Grandpa's neck in the photo was the same circle, the crackerjack mirror. He decided to take the photographs to Grandpa to cheer up his hospital room. As he turned, he saw a light move through the window in the front yard. A flashlight. 2 flashlights, it turned out to be. A pair of men were coming up the walk, muttering. They had unfamiliar voices.
"You should have done this morning," one said.
"I couldn't, all right. I saw the mailman coming up the block and had to bail."
"Mailman, right," the first voice said, disgustedly.
They had reached the front door and were fiddling with something there. Billy ran into the bedroom.
"I don't want to hear any more about it," Billy heard the second man say. "Besides, I heard the old man's real sick. It's not like we're up against a deadline or anything."
The door opened, and it squeaked as it always did in all the years Billy had been coming here. The boy quickly hit the floor and scooted himself under the bed, the scattered coins making much more noise than he wanted. He and his cousin used to play under their grandparents' bed all the time when they were small, but now it was a tight fit. The intruders were in the living room.
"How do you even know it's here?" the second man asked.
"My dad said he always carried it on him, but the doctor told me the old man was clean when they brought him in."
"So?"
"So, it's here someplace."
Billy shivered under the bed. This was bad. He could hear them at the closet, lifting the couch, fiddling with things in the kitchen.
"You know, a lot of this is junk. Maybe it doesn't work anymore."
"It works," the first man said quietly. "But the things it brings in have to be small."
"Yeah?"
"Keep looking."
He could hear their footfalls as they stepped on and kicked things Grandpa had spent his life collecting.
"Tony, I'm going to check the bathroom, okay?"
said the second man. He left the kitchen.
"Don't fall in,"
the first man called. Billy heard drawers being pulled out, cupboards being opened, and utensils being rifled through. Neither man was being subtle or careful.
"Hey, Tony,"
the second man called. His voice didn't carry well from the bathroom, and Billy couldn't make out what he said.
"What?"
the man called Tony asked, and walked toward the bathroom. Billy didn't know anybody named Tony.
"I said, I bet he has a safe in his room somewhere."
"Didn't you check already?"
"Yeah, but it could be in the closet and walls or something."
Billy took his chance to flee. He pulled himself out from under the bed and scrambled to his feet. The two pictures he was going to take to Grandpa were on top of the torn mattress. He scooped them up and crept out of the bedroom. He had to walk carefully in the semi-darkness and almost tripped over a large metal gas can sitting at the end of the hall. He snuck through the living room and reached the front door.
He remembered the squeaking sound it made and wondered what he should do. From Grandpa's room came a heavy crash. Grandma's vanity had been pushed over. The boy used that moment to wrench open the door and run out. He almost lost the smaller photo on the porch, but caught it before it could hit the ground. He was a few steps down the path when he heard one of the men shouting from the living room.
"Adams, get over here!"
Billy stopped, terror freezing him where he stood. A second later, he heard the man growl,
"Did you leave the door open? What kind of an idiot are you?"
A few feet away, the men closed the door and locked it behind them. Billy ran to his bicycle, sticking the picture frames under his T-shirt, mindful of the cracked glass, and riding away as fast as he could. His legs didn't feel tired anymore. About halfway home, riding past the strip mall on Locust Lane, Billy got an idea. He parked his bike in front of Fat Ian's Pizza and went to the phone booth, dialing 911. The dispatcher asked him what his emergency was, and he said,
"People are stealing things in the house where William Brookhart lives."
He gave the address, told them to hurry, and hung up. He rode as fast as his legs would pump him for home, now afraid of both the robbers and the police. Billy had bad dreams that night. Dreams of strange men and women pointing flashlights and reaching for him. He awoke around dawn when he heard his father turning off the shower before work and didn't think he could go back to sleep. His legs ached as he climbed out of bed and got dressed. Too much bicycle riding, too little vegging out in front of the television. When he stepped into the kitchen, his mother was there too, making coffee in her bathrobe. They looked unhappy.
"Did we wake you, sport?"
Dad asked him. Billy ignored the question.
"What's wrong?" "We have some more bad news," Mom started to say.
The boy's heart sank in his chest. Grandpa had died in the hospital, and Billy hadn't yet said goodbye. But instead, his father said,
"Last night, there was a fire at Grandpa's house. It burned down, son."
As horrified as he was to hear the news, he was also relieved.
"Will you take me to see Grandpa? To tell him?"
"Honey, I don't know if we should tell him,"
Mom said.
"He doesn't need more worries right now."
"Maybe not," Dad said. "But the old man never liked to run from his problems. To shield him from..."
"Don't call him the old man,"
Billy said, suddenly angry at his father.
"You sound like..."
He cut himself off, receiving a strange look from both his parents.
"Sound like who?"
Like he's not your dad,"
Billy said at last.
"Gee, son, I didn't mean anything by it,"
Dad said. Then he laughed a little.
"I mean, you've got to admit, he is an old man."
"So are you,"
Billy said, and went back to his room. Billy waited until he heard his mother get in the shower. Then he left the house, getting his bike out of the yard. In his backpack, he carried both of the pictures he had rescued, realizing that if he had left them where he'd found them, they would have been burned along with the house. He rode over to the hospital, making much poorer time than the day before due to the soreness in his legs. He arrived before visiting hours began, but the nurse, who seemed much nicer than she had been the day before, told him it would be all right to go in.
"You might want to read to him," she said. "I started, but had to go."
Him read to Grandpa? It had always been the other way around. Still, Billy nodded.
"Don't be too long, okay?"
The nurse knocked on Grandpa's door, peeked inside, and then turned back to the boy. She looked at him for a moment, measuring him with her eyes.
"What?"
he asked her.
"Never mind what I said. Take as much time as you need."
"Okay,"
It bothered Billy the way she said that. He stepped into the room. His grandfather was asleep in the hospital bed. One of those beeping machines that watched his heartbeat glowed beside him. Billy approached the bed, thinking he looked much worse than the day before. Grandpa's face looked drawn and small, with a clear tube going into his nose. Billy assumed it was making it easier to breathe, but thought it might also give him medicine. On the dresser next to him, a book was lying open, something called The Red Badge of Courage. Billy watched him for a moment, and then the old man's eyes opened. He seemed to struggle to focus on the boy.
"Who is it?"
he asked.
"It's me, Billy."
"Hello, son,"
Grandpa said, smiling. He still wasn't looking at the boy.
"Are you a sight for sore eyes?"
Billy thought that was supposed to be a joke, but he didn't feel like laughing.
"Did your parents bring you by so early?"
Grandpa asked.
"No, I rode my bike."
"Did you? Good for you. And they say kids today don't get exercise."
Billy looked at his feet.
"Grandpa, I have some bad news."
"Ah,"
the man said, smiling a little.
"This is really bad, so get ready,"
Billy told him.
"Worse than, say, my house burning down?"
Grandpa asked.
"How did you know?"
"Your Aunt Gretchen called earlier and told me the news."
"Oh,"
Billy said, a little disappointed that he hadn't been the one to break it to him. Immediately, he felt guilty about it.
"I'm sorry."
Grandpa didn't look angry or sad. He just shrugged.
"It's all right, Bill. It was a big house for just one person anyway. Besides, I don't know how many more years of living in it I had."
Billy ignored this troubling comment.
"But all your stuff, all your memories."
"I still have my memories, Bill."
Even so, Billy felt like he might cry, contemplating the enormity of the loss.
"These things happen, son,"
Grandpa told him.
"Bad wiring, too many things plugged in behind the TV, you know."
"No, Grandpa, it wasn't an accident."
Billy leaned forward, whispering.
"I was there."
"You were there?"
"I didn't start it, but there were men there."
"Ah,"
the old man said again, not sounding shocked or concerned.
"They were looking for something, breaking stuff,"
Billy told him.
"They were bad men."
Grandpa started coughing then. It wasn't very loud and sounded like it had wind in it. When he recovered, he said,
"There are bad men in the world. I'm glad they didn't hurt you."
"They were looking..."
Billy glanced behind him to make sure they were alone.
"They were looking for the mirror, weren't they?"
"Probably. I made the mistake of telling the tale to more souls than just you over the last 6 decades. I get careless sometimes. I even used to wear it around my neck like a necklace from time to time."
That reminded the boy of the photos he had saved. He picked his backpack up off the floor.
"You were lucky they didn't catch you. If it was who I think, that would have been trouble."
"One was called Tony,"
Billy remembered.
"The other one, I think, was Adam."
Grandpa nodded, staring off in the direction of the window.
"They didn't see me. I ran away,"
Billy told him.
"I called the police. I wonder if they caught those guys."
"I'll have to ask about it,"
Grandpa said.
You were brave to do that, Bill. Why were you there last night?
I was looking for the mirror. For it. Do you think they found it?
They might have. I kept it pretty well hidden, though. I imagine they set the fire to cover the break-in. A shame.
Do you need anything?
Billy asked.
I brought you some pictures.
Some what?
Grandpa asked. Billy held one of them up, but Grandpa didn't see it there. He realized Grandpa couldn't see anything.
It's a picture of you and your mom and dad. You're a boy in it, in front of an old faith sign.
Ah, we went to Yellowstone National Park one summer. The whole family. My mother won a free trip there in a telephone contest. Funny how things like that happened, isn't it?
Billy nodded and put the photo on the stand next to the book.
I was going to bring these to cheer you up. I didn't know what was going to happen to your house, or I would have brought more stuff.
Billy suddenly felt tears coming to his eyes. He was aware there was nothing left. But even worse, that Grandpa couldn't even see the items he had salvaged.
There, there, Grandpa said,
reaching out and patting Billy's head. The boy hugged the old man, sniffling and crying, not caring that he sounded a little like a baby. It just wasn't fair.
I appreciate the picture,
Grandpa said after a minute.
Thank you.
I brought another one,
Billy said, and broke away to retrieve it from his backpack.
The glass was broken and I had to knock it all out. Sorry.
Another picture?
Grandpa asked, his white eyebrows raising.
Which one?
It's the one of you and Grandma at your anniversary.
Then Grandpa did something very odd. He began to chuckle. It seemed to hurt him to laugh, but he kept on anyway.
What's funny?
Bill, why did you take this one picture?
Grandpa asked.
I thought you'd like it, 'cause it has everybody in it. Look, there's me.
He pointed, then felt ashamed about it. He put his hand in his pocket.
Is that the real reason?
What do you mean?
Do you know what a coincidence is?
Grandpa asked, looking unusually excited.
Yes.
Well, this has to be the world's biggest coincidence, son. Look behind the picture, in the frame.
Billy pried off the metal backing and pulled the picture free. Taped behind it was a dull gray circle of what had once been shiny plastic. By its very cheapness, the boy knew it had come from a Cracker Jack box. Billy held it up.
Grandpa, it's...
I know, whispered Grandpa. Maybe there's magic in that mirror yet.
And the old man fell asleep.
The end.
Okay, so that was Grandpa's Prize, and I remember it hasn't always had that title. It used to be called Untitled Cracker Jack Prize Story. This was written for a class. I was trying to find my notes to see if I had written down like exactly what the class was and what the assignment was, and the only thing I had was a two-sentence note at the end of the very first version of this story. Well, it's not even the first version, the first typed version of this story. And what it was I was in college. See, that sounds like a helicopter. You hear that? Davison, I've heard reports of some maniac podcasting out in the rain. It's the news helicopter. We gotta get a chopper on that story right away. Shoot, now I hear music too. So it's all conspiring. What was I saying? Oh, okay. So I was in a class. I'm trying to remember what the class was. In my notes, I had two sentences, and the first sentence was when the story was written, the day, and the class, but it was the class number. It wasn't, you know, this was creative writing or intro to narrative or playwriting or any of those things. It was the, like, TMA 201 or something like that. So I don't know exactly what the course was, and I thought it was for the final. But it wasn't. It turned out it was for the midterm of the class. We were all in the classroom. I think that there were, you know, regular questions that had to be answered, and then this was the essay portion of the midterm. And they said, well, here, just let me read the actual notes of what the requirements for the assignment were.
Question 12. Write a brief narrative that has in it the following elements. A. Events. B. A quest motif. C. Conflict. D. Resolution to the conflict.
Okay, thank you, Rich Outfield from Slightly in the Future. How are gas prices? So, that was the assignment. And we just sat down, we had to write a story, the beginning, the middle, and an end. And the quest motif. And I was surprised to read that yesterday because, I mean, does this have a quest motif, really? I don't think so. I mean, the boy's not given an assignment. Go fulfill this. You need to find, well, maybe he is, actually. Huh. Okay, fine. It qualifies. Anyway, I sat down and I wrote this in the class, and I remember that they gave us like an hour to do it or whatever period of time they usually would ask to get these things done, and they'd given us like two sheets of blank paper for the essay portion, but because it was a story and because it's me, I was like, oh, hey, guy, can I get more paper? I sat there and I wrote this as my midterm assignment, and I did get a good score on it. I don't know why I told you that. It's almost like one of those contest stories that I like to share, where it's like, this was the rules of the contest, and this was the story that I wrote. And I always have to add that I lost that particular contest. But this one was for a grade rather than a prize, and I got a good grade. So that's fine. Just don't get why the helicopter is hanging around. Oh, there's a park bench on the other side of the stream. I guess it's a river. A couple of days last summer, I came out to this river in an inflatable raft. I paddled around, and I was thinking today, how might I podcast from a raft and somehow like film it or get footage so you can see that, you know, I'm out here on the water while I'm doing it. And then another part of me was just like, well, why on earth would you want to podcast from a raft or film that? I don't know. I've not got an answer. I was surprised by the date in that note. Also a little surprised about the quest motif, but I mentioned that. I was surprised by the date because when I read this story to narrate it yesterday, I thought, you know, this is about the death of my grandmother. I can really tell that that's what this is. I assumed that I had written it right after she had died. But no, it was more than a year after that. So I don't know, maybe I'm just looking into it. It does seem to be about death, the story. You know, little boy and an old man. Something that I really enjoy writing, I guess. Too much, I don't know. One of these days I'm going to get around to doing another of the Ben Parks stories, and I had the idea of there being an old man that, I'm not going to say takes Ben under his wing, but he sort of sees Ben, who has no parents and is on the outs with the sheriff's department, and decides, oh, here's somebody who can help me on my farm, under the guise of me teaching him about farming and living on the land. Basically, it's like, here's a free servant. And I think I've explained this before with my writing process, and I know everybody is different, but as far as my writing process goes, I usually have to have three elements that I want for the story before I feel like, okay, it's ready to be written. And an element can be something as simple as an old man with a secret for this Ben Park story, or as complicated as, okay, I know I have the ending for this story. So they complete their journey and each one is granted a wish. And she, you know, she wishes for the abilities to protect the land, and he wishes for her to fall in love with him. It can be a character, it can be a twist, it can be a scary moment, but I usually have to have three of those. And with this Ben Park story, I have two, and I haven't come up with the third. I wouldn't be surprised if it was like 8 months ago or 10 months ago that I sent Big the email where I said, oh, I've got this idea for the next one. I just need one more element and then I'll write it. I'm not particularly confident that Grandpa's Prize is a great story. I won't have the choir of disembodied children repeat with me, but there is a moment that I really like in the story, and that is when Grandpa tells the boy, you know, that I had a good life with a good wife, you know, many years of truth and lies, and a magical Cracker Jack prize, or whatever that part is. Well, the part with the rhyme, I remember writing that in class and then figuring, well, I better hang a lampshade on that because that's stupid. I guess I like that. Weird, huh? Anyhow, I have several stories with child protagonists and old men in them, and several more to go, I would guess. But yeah, this story was sort of about seeing somebody that you love on their deathbed, and they don't get better. They're not going to get better. And I like that too. It seems like it was just 2 or 3 years ago that I wrote this story, really. And it wasn't. The 90s are like 20 years ago now. And I remember it wasn't long ago when I had no memories that were 20 years old. I guess that's just gonna get bigger and bigger. I guess in the back of my mind, this was gonna be some peaceful place where I could podcast and be out among nature. And I guess I have done that. But, ooh, that's loud. Yeah, it's all conspiring, huh? I don't know. Maybe I don't have much more to say about Grandpa's Prize. All right, now I'm in the car. Much quieter, right? I've explained before my attraction to writing about old men and young boys. And girls, to a lesser extent. One of these days, though, I need to start writing about middle-aged guys. About people who look and they're like, holy cow, where did my life go? Once I write that once, then every story is going to be about that, right? Write what you know. But for example, I was editing Journey into Another Dimension. And there's this reference to He-Man and the Masters of the Universe in there. And I thought, you know, that's really something that was only popular in the 80s. And so that ages the protagonist that he has memories of that from his childhood. Eventually, those kind of references have to go. They have to be replaced by Aqua Teen Hunger Force, or I suppose Power Rangers is perennial. But writing a story like this one, or writing a story about, remember Library Week, where I talked in detail about video stores, something that dates a story, I don't know. Oh, you know, somebody was talking about an early episode of Star Trek The Next Generation where one of the ships in the Federation had been built in the Soviet Union.
and how dated that is. That the Soviet Union didn't even last through Star Trek The Next Generation, let alone continue on to the 24th century. But what are you going to do about stuff like that? If you're super paranoid about your story seeming dated, then you've got to write fantasy or westerns, science fiction that makes no reference to modern day at all. I don't know, just the changes in my lifetime. Cell phones have been such a huge game changer as far as the way modern society works. And it was fun to see horror movies have to address that cell phone thing, you know, in the mid-90s, where it's just like, oh, well, how come they don't have cell phones? Do you remember Scream? Scream was December 1996. And the sheriff says, what are you doing with a cellular telephone, boy? Maybe he doesn't do it in that accent, but I think that's word for word what he says. And it's everybody has one. I complained on an episode of the Doonstief about my uncle's daughter not having a cell phone. She was 9 years old and the teacher's taking him to task of like, what kind of a parent wouldn't give their 9-year-old a cell phone, you piece of shit? And here we are just a couple years later and you don't even blink at something like that. Of course a 9-year-old would have a cell phone. Duh. I took my nephew to basketball practice and just a second, let me start the engine so I can find out what time it is. Sorry, that reminded me that's what I'm doing right now. I dropped my nephew off at basketball practice, which gives me an hour. Sometimes I'll go home, but most of the time, there's not enough time to go home and then come back and get him in an hour. So I will hit a store, I will go get gas, or sometimes when the sun is shining, I will sit and I will write or I will read. He does that with basketball, there's football practice, baseball. He's a sports kid, I guess. But last week, I dropped him off. Then I came back an hour later, and he was sitting on the sidewalk. And I was just like, wow, did you get out early? And he said, basketball practice got canceled. So I've just been sitting here for an hour. Which for a kid, you know, in the 21st century without a phone is unheard of. I should have done time for it. I wonder what the statute of limitations is on that. Maybe I could still be arrested for admitting that. I guess what had happened is that they had texted his mom, my sister, that basketball practice was canceled, but she was at work and I guess didn't see the text or didn't forward the text on to me. I don't know what happened. But it was one of those things where it's like, well, hey, had the kid had a cell phone, he wouldn't have sat here for an hour. And I guess what he had done was that there was another kid that was there just hanging out at the rec center. And they played basketball because my nephew had brought his. And so he hadn't been sitting there for a full hour. But still, I mean, it was pretty frustrating. And I thought, well, at the very least, he should have a piece of paper with his parents' telephone number on it, maybe his grandma's telephone number, my telephone number on it, so that if something were to happen, he could get a hold of one of us. We live in an era where you don't even memorize telephone numbers. I think my mom has had the same cell phone number for 15 years, and I don't know it. So I guess I was talking about the game changer thing, but the world today is so different from when I wrote Grandpa's Prize. And I don't feel like Grandpa's Prize is insanely dated, but now every single kid has a cell phone, and that means that every single kid has a camera and or a video camera. And that could create a lot of interesting ideas and stories of things that, you know, Billy saw these dudes at his grandpa's house. You know, he could have gotten pictures of them or recorded the audio of them. And grandpa has a bunch of framed photographs. But will this generation have framed photographs? You know what I mean? It's like there used to be these devices. My sister had one. I think my niece might have had one.
where you could plug your cell phone into it and print out pictures that you had taken on your cell phone. But that's already archaic technology. Nobody does that anymore. They just share the picture. They send the picture to your phone. Marshall Latham sent me a photograph to my phone yesterday. And in the calling to the main character, Joshua realizes that he has no pictures of his children. They were all in his cell phone or on his computer. And without his cell phone and his computer, that's it. He doesn't have any pictures of his kids. Now, I'm sure his wife would still have them, but that's awful, dude. The idea of that. I don't know. Maybe I'm super naive, because it seems like, okay, he should be able to go on to, like, his Facebook account or his MySpace account or his family blog or whatever, and you can just find pictures of his children. Chase and Talia, I think, were the names of his kids. And save them to whatever device you have, and now you have pictures again to show your mother what your children looked like. I hadn't thought about that. And it, you know, it doesn't change the story any. I think about stories that, I mean, okay, Stephen King is the example I always go to because I've read everything he's written, and every once in a while I read a short story that he wrote in the 70s, and it doesn't seem dated to me. I mean, maybe there'll be a reference to Patty Hearst or Jimmy Carter or Nixon or what's her name? Janis Joplin. Something, you know, like that in a story. And I guess it does show, okay, this is the era in which this takes place. But most of the stories seem pretty timeless. I'll read a Bradbury story or I'll read Robert Silverberg's story, I'll read something like that, and often there will be something that's dated about the story, just maybe the way a character talks or the level of technology that exists in the world. But it doesn't ruin the story if it was obviously written in the 50s. It can, I guess. When people see stories about the Cold War, young people, when they see that, is that just ludicrous to them? The idea of there's a whole country that wants to destroy us and people are so afraid of World War III, nuclear war. Do they just sort of chuckle because they know that it never happened? Or do they know all too well because they've grown up in the 21st century when there are millions of people, I mean, maybe more than that, from all walks of life and all different countries that want to kill people in America. I don't know. I was just reading a Jill Walton book, and it took place in the 70s in England, and she was just musing on how unfair it was that the Russians and the Americans were going to blow up the world, and they couldn't do anything about it. A helplessness. You know, they're these great big world powers, and they seem determined to destroy the world, and what can you do about it? None of this has anything to do with Grandpa's Prize. I guess I have nothing to say about Grandpa's Prize. Sorry. I think it's an all right story. I guess just because it was written so long ago, and I've never published it. You know, sometimes I think about those stories. There's a couple of stories that we talked about doing on the Doonstief. I'd be like, oh, but it's so dated. And Big would say, well, just okay, update it. And then we'll run it on the Doonstief. And I never do. But there were a couple of moments while I was reading this where I was just like, oh, I seem to have outgrown that style of writing. And there were a couple of like grammar, not grammar problems, but the way that you write, maybe that is grammar, where I've learned that you don't do that way. It's sort of, you know, with where quotation marks go and how they work. Updated that. But other than that, you know, here's my work from going on 20 years ago, and I shared it with you. It does have another related story out there. Remember how I often talk about that website where every other month they would have a writing contest on there, and I participated in four or five of them, maybe six, and
and really enjoyed that. Never won, ever. But one time I did win second place on one of those. And it was another story about Billy and his grandfather that took place before this one. Billy had had some kind of problem at school, and Grandpa had told him a story that made a point about what was going on in school, you know, like learn from this story. And by then, because I had sent them Halloween Night, they had a word limit on the stories. So the story that I wrote was too long, even though it was super short. I think that the word limit that they ended up coming up with was 2,000 words. And so what I did is cut out all the Grandpa and Billy stuff and just presented the story that Grandpa told. And that one won second prize. Anyhow, it's done. It's over. It was from a long time ago. So I said that I probably should start writing about middle-aged people or people that are getting older, and they say, I can't believe it. Where have the years gone? But yeah, this particular story, as I said, you know, came from a point in my life where I related a heck of a lot more to the little boy than to the old man. And as things go on, it's going to become more and more lopsided the other direction. But I wonder if I were in that same class and that assignment were given today, where, you know, it's not a story that I had been thinking about. It was just, this was the assignment. Come up with something right now, and this is what I came up with. I wonder, could I do better today? Now, certainly I could write something more sophisticated, write something more complicated, write something longer. And maybe the longer part is a detriment rather than an advantage. But I don't know, the story seems pretty good to me. And, you know, the only way that you get better is by doing it, by practicing, by saying, okay, I'm going to write one from the point of view of an old woman. And maybe that doesn't work so well. Maybe you have no idea what menopause feels like. Or, you know, hips that ache when it's going to rain is like, and all that stuff. But you learn by doing, by writing a story with a character that's not you, or trying a different style, or stepping out of your safe zone, or just writing something new, something where you've got this vague idea of how it would work. A lot of times, as I was saying before, I'll have an idea of something that would be cool or funny or scary. And that's what you've got in your head, but you've got to come up with a setup to that. You've got to come up with a scenario in which that can happen. I wish I had a little bit more practice. I wish I wrote more stories. But that's me. I just need to do it more. And so I guess that goes back to what I was just talking about with time. It's like, okay, so we're going on 2 decades since I wrote this, and I haven't grown that much. Maybe I haven't practiced that much since those days. Hopefully it's not too late to practice, to get better, to get good. Yeah, who knows what stuff I'm going to write in 2018 and how dated that will become in the future, where somebody can read the story and go, oh, I remember who was president when he wrote that. I guess it's kind of neat to imagine that, to speculate about that. We'll see if it ends up happening. The worst thing would be like, oh, well, I never did write that story. I never did practice that much. I never made the time. Ooh, depressing, huh? All right. I will leave you on that bleak note. Rish Outfield, goodbye.
Now I'll play, you sing, the perfect way for the evening to begin.
The music in this episode was created by Kevin MacLeod, whose shenanigans can be found over at Incompetech.com. For your information, the podcast you have just suffered through was produced under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license. I don't really know what that means, and I'm betting that you don't either. Have a nice night.
The desk and bookshelf overturned, the closet ransacked, drawers scattered around the floor, boxes emptied, the mattress pulled down.
For the assignment work. Wow, that is loud. I'm wanting it to go away, but it's not. Kind of like the Rish Outcast, huh? Oh, and I'm spitting, too. Okay, just ignore the sound if you can, folks.